My name is Tyne Newton. I'm a freelance writer. I started writing about the occult and a local area where people had disappeared, and there seemed to be some strange activity going on there. And the Unexplained magazine, which was quite big at that time, this is 1980, were very interested in it, and so I was able to write an article about it, which was actually went a lot deeper into occult matters than I had first anticipated.
So, at Clapton Woods, what was happening there?
Well, we never actually found any of the people that were involved, but there was, in one of the buildings there, there was a huge demonic mural that was photographed. And I've got a colour photograph of it. It was photographed by Charles Walker, whom was the lead investigator into this at that time. And the locals have tried to put it down to a rock band, but it's a very specific visual impression of something called the goatfish, which is a very early a sort of Middle Eastern interpretation of the combination of a sort of devil and a sort of sea creature, if you like. I mean, it's all very, very odd.
Most people are familiar with the church service, where you get some hymns, you get some readings from the Bible, you go and have communion and that sort of thing, then you all go and have coffee and go home. What about these gatherings? How did they go?
My understanding of it is it's really is do what thou wilt, you know, and there's a lot of sexual activity, and it builds up to the sacrificial rites of some poor creature or another, and then my understanding of it is that the blood is spilled and it's sort of the creature, and it's drunk and it's sort of massaged into the people's bodies, you know, it's all very ghastly.
When you say sexual, do you mean heterosexual or not?
Both, either. It's a question of energy. Crowley discovered that the whole sexual thing is a question of energy, and it's supposedly the highest form of energy. It's energy. It's the force that the people who are controlling this, there will be a sort of high priestess who is the leader, and a couple of others who won't be actually partaking necessarily in this. They'll be controlling it, and they are the sort of key people in the actual ritual. It's not just a whole load of people who are sort of doing this for the sake of it. There has to be someone who is adept and enough to control the whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm wondering whether how far this all really goes back, because recently I read a book by Margaret Murray called The God of the Witches, and she wrote another one called The Witch God in Western Europe. Now, she claimed, she was an anthropologist in the 20th century, she claimed that this goes right back, like, literally thousands of years.
Yes, exactly. Margaret Murray was a very intelligent woman, actually, put down by a lot of people, but she knew her stuff, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And yes, yeah, it's quite right, yes.
Can you just take us through, one by one, the books you've done and what they're mainly about, please?
Well, The Demonic Connection is about the whole, is the sort of Clapham Woods mysteries, and ley lines and that, and what I believe that their ideas are. The dark worship, which followed that up, includes some of Andrew Collins's research as well, into the character called the Black Alchemist, who was very active in the east of England, but was apparently had sort of met up with them at the Friends of Hecate, which were the Clapham group. I followed that up with London's Mystical Legacy, which is one of my favourite books, which looks at the Hidden History of London. There's a recent archaeological dig which has been taking place in the sort of South London area, which has found that certain evidence of ritual activity by people, which dates back to 3000 BC, so it's 5000 years old. Again, the information has been somewhat covered up, I think, by the mainstream, because it contradicts the whole thing of the Romans coming in and creating London, where it was used as a gathering point 3000 years before the Romans, that the people gathered and did ritual activity in London, because again, London is so full of ley lines and underground rivers and all sorts of things there, which people aren't aware of.
So how do the occultists keep things secret?
Well, that's a very good question. This whole thing is that it's done through fear, actually. I think that their cult demands certain things, sacrifices. I mean, not all occultists are sacrifices. I must just say that. It's only a relatively small percentage of these people that they're so dangerous because of what they're doing. And it just undermines people mentally. What they do, and that's how they keep it tight and keep it secretive.
It sounds to me a bit like a kind of mafia.
Well, yes, it is in a sense. I think some of the really really dark black magic, for want of a better word, groups are like that. And once people get into it, they can't get out of it very easily. They have to go to some of them have to be exorcised by good people in the church, and they are some good people in the church, you know, like Canon, like Bishop Walker, Dominic Walker, whom I know, he was training exorcists to do this work, to exorcise, not necessarily just people who've been involved with it, but certain areas, certain rooms where I've had problems, shall we say, in the houses. You know, it's something with such a vast subject. I mean, I'm trying to contextualize it as best I can at the moment, but it's not easy.
But I mean, there have been some, actually, I think, pretty good writers on the topic. Montague Summers wrote a book called Witchcraft and Demonology. I think he was around about the early 1900s, started off here in Bristol.
Yeah, I think he was a churchman himself. Yeah, he was. If I remember rightly, he was good buddies with Crowley, Aleister Crowley. I think they sort of met up and had long dinners. Sessions which sort of went into the evening, you know, apparently.
Well, what do you make of Crowley? He's a sort of a bit of a legend in this world, isn't he?
No, he was definitely, he was no witch. He was a Satanist, a very egotistical man. But he came unstuck by engaging in the Corazon ritual. Now, Corazon was a demon, allegedly, that John Dee, the Elizabethan occultist, wrote about, and he said, "Don't go anywhere near it. You know, don't touch it. You know, either." And of course, Crowley. That was meat on the bone to Crowley. You know, he would sort of go for anything that was supposedly forbidden. He did this ritual. I think it was in 1909 in the Sahara Desert with his assistant, Victor Neuberg. And Crowley went into a trance, and the Corazon demon attacked Neuberg, allegedly manifested in it, and attacked went for Neuberg in the form of the figure of Set, which is a sort of devil sort of entity, and Neuberg was was never the same. He wasn't a stupid man, but he was never the same after that. And because Crowley was in a trance, he was left untouched. Or affected him mentally, shall we say.
Now, he came up with this whole thing of the Golden Dawn, didn't he? Which was quite, I think, if you read Sax Rohmer and the old Fu Manchu books, you'll see he's, because he was in that circle, Rohmer was, who lived in Reigate, yeah, and he would write about this. In fact, it's funny because you get some people who seem to be involved in this stuff, but use it a bit like, maybe like Dennis Wheatley, someone else, who gets interested in it because they want to tell the public about it rather than use it for their own ends.
Exactly. And, of course, Wheatley and his wife were both in the Foreign Office during the war because Churchill was very aware of all this stuff, and he was aware that the Germans were using it. There was, in 1940, a group of witches in southern England in the New Forest did a now infamous ritual called the Spell to Repel Hitler, because they knew that in 1940 that this was at the time of the sort of Battle of Britain or just before, that he was preparing to invade this. And so they did this spell, and allegedly there was a visitation from a man in and a woman in a large vehicle, large car, sort of royal car, and it was supposed to be Mountbatten with Dolores Hall, who was his secretary, who became Madeleine Montalban, the writer on occult matters in Prediction Magazine. But apparently, allegedly, this is Mountbatten knew about this, and he went down to the New Forest area see how they were getting on, you know.
Do you think it's fair to say that there are parts of Britain where this kind of activity is concentrated?
Oh, yeah, definitely. There are certain areas, but there are areas that they wouldn't use, and there are other areas which are particularly viable for their interests, shall we say.
So where?
Well, I mean, obviously, Clapham Woods is one. There's the New Forest. There is certainly areas in Devon and Cornwall. I think in Scotland as well, there are certain areas which are conducive to what they want to do. And probably others as well. I mean, but serious occultists will use sort of southern Sussex, southern England, and the west country, Devon, Cornwall.
And what about this idea of conclaves? Because these people have to get together somewhere. I imagine they want to get together at night and out of sight somewhere.
Oh, yeah, sure. Woods, of course, private woods are excellent. Farming areas, you know, they could be used if the farmer is paid enough money to turn the other cheek and told that it's just something that he doesn't have to worry about, that sort of thing. Also, in bad weather, in sort of houses, large old houses, halls, that sort of thing, although I have to be careful with halls, I was thinking private property, it's mainly in.
What sort of nature do these gatherings take? I mean, how do they work?
It tends to vary, actually. In some places, there's lots of sacrificial rites before the main sacrificial rite, and it kind of goes on all evening. But in other ones, it's there's probably some energy ritual which will involve sex, all types of sex. I mean, for the serious group, I mean, it's not just basic male and female. It goes either ends to get the energies, and to get people in the right sort of frame of mind, and to get the energies going before there is a, a sacrificial rite of some sort.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, how this whole idea of sacrifice was absolutely prevalent all over the place before Christianity came. I mean, you've got even the Holy Land with the Jews, they were doing sacrifices in the temple before Christ came along, and he said, well, look, this is it, no more sacrifice needed. So are you talking about animal sacrifices, and do these things leave a trace or do they clear up after themselves when they do these things?
Yes, might be animal sacrifices and, I'm afraid, human sacrifices as well. It's quite easy these days to get an old tramp from the streets of London or somewhere. And if the thing is well organised, they can sort of, when it's done, they can just dump the body somewhere. Or it can be animals or whatever. But it is a living creature of some sort, I'm afraid. Which I know is going to, it worries me, isn't it? Because I love animals and so on. But there's not that many people who actually do it. But the ones that do, and ones that do it seriously, are very dangerous.
Yeah, well, don't the police take an interest in this?
Well, some of them yes, they do. But out in East Sussex, some years ago, there was said to be some. One or two policemen who were actually involved in this, who were actually doing this, and so they were able to cover it up. They were involved in certain groups. I mean, my colleague and friend Jonathan Tapsell has done a lot of research into this, and he could probably tell you much more about it than I can. This was in East Sussex areas. When you get that sort of situation, when people who are actually supposed to be upholding the law are involved, then it gets very difficult.
What about international connections? Are there connections across the channel?
Oh, certainly, actually. I understand that there are some bankers and people who... I'm talking about the big cults now, and Switzerland is an area. Basel is an area where there is the Bank of International Settlements.
Okay.
And that is supposed to be a cover for major rituals.
Well, hang on a minute, because they are the organisation that regulate worldwide central banking, aren't they?
Exactly, precisely. And what I have heard, and there are people who've been there to Basel in Switzerland, who have seen there are lots of like Illuminati and occult symbols in certain places around there, which they identified.
Yeah.
I think there's been an interview with them. Somebody who left the inner banking circle who said that this was going on. This was some years ago. It's about 15, 20 years ago now. I don't know what's happened since then.
Well, you mentioned the Illuminati. For most people, this is a sort of fiction.
Yes, yeah, it is, but it is. Masonic rites did combine with the Illuminati rites. I've got a book published by Lewis Masonic, gives details of this, and that the Illuminati, rather than being a fictional thing, are actually real. I mean, they combined with the Masons at one point. It's quite detailed. It gives all the details of the Scottish Rite and the so-called Illuminati rituals.
Well, look, you mentioned the Nazis earlier, and I wonder, are there, you know, signs that you can see if you look at film of the Nazis, the specific actions that they were taking, the characteristics of the SS and things like that, that give away a bit the fact that they are actually linked to occultism or not?
Yes, I think there was at the time. I mean, one of the most dangerous occultists, I think, was Joseph Mengele. He was into this sort of cloning of people and that. He was a very intelligent man, and he disappeared at the the end of the or before the end of the war, and turned up in America, apparently in South America. He had several different passports, and he could. It was alleged that he was involved with the CIA in some of their dodgy sort of mind bending programs and that. So I would certainly point towards him. And Himmler as well was a very scary individual who would think nothing of shooting anybody, even some of his own people, if he thought they weren't doing their jobs properly. You know, I think most do are of particular interest in that count. I mean, Hitler himself just allowed it to happen because he thought it would give him more power. I don't think he was actually wasn't as necessarily involved. He just certainly didn't have the intelligence that Mengele had. Mengele was a very dangerous character, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, isn't it interesting the way, you know, you're talking there about cloning. This is something which in the United States and Britain has really taken off. I mean, they're even now talking about the things like designer babies now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very scary stuff. Yeah.
I don't know. And also, of course, I wonder what you make of just coming up to the present, things like AI, because this seems to me to be a sort of almost like creating life itself.
Exactly. Again, it's another very dangerous thing. And where's it going to end? You know, I mean, okay, it's been started, but how is it going to be controlled? I mean, we're in Terminator areas, aren't we, really?
Yeah, the people behind this stuff, I mean, who knows who's really behind it, but they're trying to say it's inevitable, but this is almost like a belief system. It's like almost like a religion. So just coming back to the occultists, can you just talk a little bit about the relationship with Christianity? Because this is obviously, it seems as if much of what they do is a sort of hatred of or response to the traditional Christian church.
Yes, it is, because they hate the Christian church, because they think that their worship is the real worship, for want of a better for want of a better word, because they were there first. So they think church is an imposed thing, because I mean it was mainly created through the Council of Nicaea in Greek in the sort of early centuries. That this was going to be the norm now, and that this Christianity would be expressed throughout Europe, which is what happened, and they think that their worship is the real worship, you know, the blood rites, the sacrificial, the goddess worship is the real worship. So that's why they hate the church, because they think it's just an imposed thing and created by a few clerics, you know.
In Christianity and in most religions, you know, say for example with Christianity, Jesus' beliefs are very clear, very open. Can you tell us a bit about this whole idea of worshipping the goddess? Who is this goddess, and what do the beliefs entail?
There are several different goddesses, which some of them all have slightly differing facets, but it's all basically the same thing. Of the 28 of the sort of the female blood menstrual cycle, which coincides with the moon. Monthly dues coincide with the phases of the moon, they think, and this is what they're trying to create. It is the sort of worship of the female entity. The priestess is the most powerful person in the so-called coven, you know, as opposed to the males. It is the priestess and the goddess worship. Mm-hmm.
And how far up into the establishment does this reach, do you think?
Well, I think there's an enormous amount of people involved in it, but I think it can go straight to the very top. Although in America it's a bit different. In here, you've got some... we have a royal family, what their involvement is unclear, although David Icke thinks that they're involved, but certainly I think that some people possibly connected to them are involved. I don't necessarily get the royals as being involved, but I may be wrong, you know, but I can't really get them involved. But it's,
yeah. It's, well, I mean, it does seem to be linked to, you know, extreme secrecy, which we get increasingly nowadays, I think, from our establishment here in Britain.
Absolutely.
I suppose the obvious question to ask is, what can we do about this? I mean, you know, obviously it's useful to know what's going on, the fact that it's being kept secret, that it's hidden, the beliefs and things. But what as we can we as, I mean, particularly if we're, you know, thinking about trying to protect young people from this, what can we do?
Well, what one can do is just to be aware, actually. I mean, if this was taught in schools, maybe, or something was taught about it, that would be a help if teachers could actually say, look, this is weird stuff, but it's worth listening to.
Well, yeah, maybe. I mean, in religious studies classes or whatever.
Yes, yeah, something like that, you know, I mean. You know, I've written books. I mean, that's all I can do for the moment, you know. Hopefully there'll be more before have to completely retire.
Well, I mean, isn't it inevitable? I mean, what we're seeing is a big decline in the church. If you go back to Victorian times, you know, the church was massive. It was de rigueur. Everyone really had to kind of get involved in one way or another.
Yeah,
but I mean, isn't it inevitable that as the Christianity declines, so these forms of worship are going to take over?
Yes, that is a strong possibility, actually, and probability, and that's probably what these people are waiting for. I mean, certainly in the States, I mean, I think Detroit, you've got posters up saying Satanism rules, you know, this sort of thing. I mean, it's quite open in certain areas, you know. I mean, not so much over here. And obviously, America's a huge country, but over here it's perhaps more easily to control. But this is an important country for this, you know, because of our history, and because we, you know, we've got an idea of what went on pre-Roman. Very much so, and what they're finding out now in these archaeological digs and so on. But, I mean, it's going to be difficult to get people... You see, the mainstream media don't want to know about any of this. And the fact that some chap had got all the police going and then said he made it all up, and so I think it was Lord Bramwell who got some... you know, got his home sort of ransacked and that, that was enough to sort of silence the mainstream media to say it's all rubbish, you know.
So, sorry, what happened there?
Well, I can't remember the names of the people involved, but some young chap claimed that he was part of a satanic order, and that certain high ups were involved, and he got the police to raid the homes of various people. And I think one of these places was Lord Bramwell, and Edward Heath was named as well, and he's been named by other people as being involved. But what happened was that having got the police to sort of invade various people's homes, he then said that he'd made it all up, and he's currently, I can't remember his name, but he's currently serving a prison sentence of about 15 years for wasting police time. And of course, the mainstream media have seized on this and said, well, it's all rubbish, you know, there's no such thing as Satanism.
Well, it's funny, it's a contrast, isn't it? If you go back to the 1980s, there were regular articles in our national newspapers
about this. Yeah, exactly. I mean, what a great way to silence it all. You know, I mean, there's something else here. You know, why did this young man make it all up?
Mm.
You know, it just doesn't fit.
What about What about Satanist spotting? Are there anywhere, are there any individuals who are openly Satanists? Or could you say, this person looks like, these are the characteristics of someone who's into this satanic worship?
Well, if we could do that, the real sort of people who are really involved in all this, you wouldn't necessarily know. You would have to be a sensitive, I think. You'd have to kind of suddenly feel that you don't want to go near that person, or there's something about them that you can't put your finger on, but you don't like them. Mm. And that is the sort of human in sort of reaction, and I think that's one of the ways to sort of spot them at the moment, because they keep their cards close to their chest naturally.
Yeah, amazing. It's like a sixth sense.
Yeah, exactly. You more or less have to use that people to sort of check, sort of spot them. You know, and you probably could spot them that way. But you'd have to be very, very psychically overt and dependable to do that, in order to do that.
Now, I mean, I also, a few years ago, interviewed a chap called Bishop Sean Manchester, who was writing about vampires in Highgate Cemetery. Do you think there is, is there such a thing as a vampire? Is this just a complete fantasy or not?
No, it's not a complete fantasy. Vampires, they can be part of this sort of stuff. People who the sacrifice involves blood, doesn't it? So, I mean, and the drinking of the blood, and the spraying of the blood, and the sort of the rubbing of the blood into the skin. So, I mean, that is a vampiristic activity itself in the real sort of satanic cult. The sacrificial cults, and that's what apparently what they do. What I understand they do, you know, it's using the life force of whatever poor creature has been sacrificed to blend in with themselves, to use that life force, so they became allegedly become stronger. You know.
Well, I noticed some of these billionaires are actually starting to inject themselves with blood. I don't know if there's a connection with that.
Well, that's quite possible, actually. Yeah.
What they say is, the idea is you take a young person's blood, inject it into you, and it somehow helps you preserve your youth.
that's quite possible that they would believe that. Yeah, yeah. God, dear, yeah.
Okay, anyway, so could you, just give us a list of some of your books so if listeners are interested, they can get hold of.
Right, the Demonic Connection, you can get hold of that through Jackie DeVoy, whom I believe you know. She's my journalist friend. She's out in Malaysia at the moment, but will be coming back very soon. So you can get it through her website, her Facebook page. The Dark Worship, that's available from Jonathan Tapsell, and the London's Mystical Legacy, and the Occult Origins of the European Union, that's also available from Jonathan Tapsell.
Well, hang on, you've just dropped a bombshell right at the very end of our interview there, Toyn. The EU...
The EU, yes. A lot of their... I have to go into this separately, actually, and do it from memory, but a lot of the EU symbolism, their thing about their sort of anthem, Ode to Joy, is about... a drunken pagan goddess in a temple, you know, and a lot of their symbolism is described as being occultic. They use a lot of weird symbolism.
I mean, I've seen, for example, people comparing, I think it's Bruegel's painting of the Tower of Babel with the actual headquarters of the European Union, which does look incredibly similar.
Exactly.
And isn't it interesting? Because this stuff, if you either see it or you don't see it. It's almost like a kind of in-joke.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Precisely. And also, the whole idea of the European Union goes back to the Nazis and Himmler and that. It's the project for Greater Germany, it was originally. And somebody, a chap called Walter Hallstein, who spoke at the Nuremberg sort of rallies, and in this one in 1939, he spoke about the project for Greater Germany. He then managed to eradicate during the war a lot of his connections to Hitler, and he became part of the EU, rising to be its president in the 1970s, and he was very much a part of, he was friendly with Edward Heath, of getting us into the EU. Mm. Walter Hallstein is his name, and he's well worth looking into.
Yeah, well, Catherine Austin Fitz in the States has described what's going on at the moment with all the upheavals, the wars in the Middle East, the poverty that's been spreading across Europe, the mass migration, which is clearly deliberate. You know, in Britain, it seems to me, I mean, it might be a controversial thing for some people, particularly on the left, but it seems to be you've got to keep importing people to keep the house prices high. You know, basic, simple stuff like that. And also to keep the wages low. That helps to do those two things, which we know the establishment loves and the financial people love. So she said it's a war on God, but God's going to win. What do you think?
Well, it's up to people. I mean, it's really up to us. We are we have the wherewithal to either sit back and do nothing, or to say no. We're not having this.
Toy Newton, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, Tony.